More than a podcast, greater than a radio show, quite simply an audio treat for the enlightened with Jill Appleton and Jill Prowse.
For October, we have returned to one of our favourite authors, Marina Fiorato, reading her fourth novel, Daughter of Siena. Once again, this historical love story is set in Italy in the early 18th century and revolves around the Palio, Siena's famously dangerous and hard-fought horse race. In this horse race, which is still celebrated twice every summer, many of the various city divisions known as Contrada sponsor riders to compete. When the trumpets sound, an unknown horseman, Riccardo Bruni, enters the race. What he does during the race not only changes his life, but also alters the course of the Medici dynasty itself.
The horseman of the Tower Contrada had been so shaken by the events of the Palio that he slept in his father's stable with Tacola, the stallion he had ridden that day. He could not explain, even to himself, why he would feel more comforted here than in the house. And he would have been better off in his bed, for in the warm clothes straw, hooves galloped through his dreams, and the parched bedding, which tickled his nose, merely served to remind him of the racetrack and the flood of blood that had soaked the dust. The sweet-smelling warmth of the horse's silky hide only brought back the events of a day he would rather forget. It was not the first time a man had died in his arms, but he had hoped that here, at home again after long years of absence, he would be spared such sights, such smells. When he was shaken awake, he felt relief as he recognised the little face before him. It was Zebra, dressed in his familiar black and white garb. The boy was well known as a go-between, carrying messages for coin, crossing without limits the Contrada lines in a way that others could not. This errand, so clearly in the day, must have been worth much. It was barely light outside the stable door. The horseman sat and blew straw from his lips, rubbing the back of his neck. "Zebra, what is it?" Zebra spoke in the staccato rhythms of hoofbeats. "The eagle. He wants you. At his house. Before daybreak."
"Me? Why?"
Zebra shrugged. He never needed details. His payment was reason enough. The horseman knew well who the eagle was. Faustino Caprimulgo, alone among all the captains, not only represented but had somehow become the emblem of his Contrada. Perhaps it was the hawk-like appearance, perhaps it was the ruthless predator's dispatch of those who crossed him, perhaps it was that he could, from his own eyrie of the towers of his palazzo, see everything that passed in his city. The horseman considered, his brain as slow as if stuffed with straw, as golden motes of dust drifted before his eyes in the first light of day. To refuse such a summons, even from the captain of a rival Contrada, would be a direct insult. But to walk into the house of a man whose son had died under his hands seemed nothing but the greatest folly. What if Faustino wished to punish him for Vincenzo's death? What if he found him culpable in some way? Could the Capitano think, as the horseman did himself, now he knew the terrible theme that had marched through his dream, that he could somehow have saved Vincenzo? The horseman eyed his messenger. Zebra had been no more than 7 when the horseman had left him 2 years ago, which made him no more than 9 now. The boy looked as if he had had little sleep. The night of the Palio, even a tragic one such as yesterday's, was his busiest night. Missives from Fantini or Capitani to each other, payments to be made between syndicates, even messages between lovers of a rival Contrada. Zebra was dropping where he stood, his little beady eyes closing. The horseman hauled himself from his bed and pushed the boy down gently into the warm hollow of straw he had left. Zebra had barely bitten the coin this horseman proffered before he fell asleep, curled up like a babe.
Violante de' Medici is governess of Siena. Although she is a good woman, she is also weak in nature. She becomes aware of a secret group called the Nine, which has been formed by the leaders of each Contrada. She discovers they are plotting to take control of the city during the second Palio of the season, and employs the handsome Riccardo to help her put an end to the plans that threaten her very existence. Another one of the central characters is Pia Ptolemy. Her father is the leader of the Owl Contrada. He has arranged for her to wed the sadistic son of the leader of the Eagle Contrada. Pia's prayers are answered when her betrothed takes a deadly fall during the race. However, her relief is short-lived as she is promptly wed to his younger and even more distasteful brother. In her desperate attempt to escape her cruel situation, Pia soon finds herself involved in the plots and intrigue surrounding the Nine and the very handsome horseman Ricardo.
Was she there? Zebra's question, delivered from the depths of a shadow, startled Ricardo as he left the house of Aquila. He lifted his finger to his lips and shook his head. He kneeled so that his eyes were on a level with the boy's. Zebra, do you know anyone in the Aquila kitchens? Of course, Katharina, the kitchen maid. Go in and beg for some food and find out where Nello goes to the Eagle's Castle in the Maremma. Zebra disappeared through the gate. As he waited for him, Ricardo thought of his new horse, Leocorno, Unicorn, Faustino had said, by reason of the white coat and the scar like the bump of a horn. Zebra emerged from the kitchen with a pancake and a smile. He goes to the Castel di Pietro tomorrow, early, to begin his training. His head jerked in the direction of the stables, with his new horse. The boy's words were heavy with significance. His new horse, Ricardo decided quickly. Let's have a look, then. Zebra's eyes widened a little, but without question he led Ricardo to an inner courtyard through a door in the loggia. They trod softly over the cobbles and opened the half-door to the Eagle's stables. Ricardo noticed the fresh straw and sparkling tack, the new wooden beams, and thought of his father's humble workplace. A hurricane lamp burned in a sconce with a soft glow. Ricardo unhooked it and moved inside, smelling the home smell of horse and hay. A dark flank gleamed from the shadows, and Ricardo walked round Nello's new horse. A big beast, pure black, heavy in the shoulder, fairly fidgeting with nervous vigour and quivering with power. Ricardo was not worried for himself. He had already begun the stream of soft talk that would gentle the beast. But he pulled Zebra round to the horse's head. If this was a race winner, he would likely be skittish and temperamental, and he did not want Zebra to catch a hoof to the skull. The horse rolled his eyes at Ricardo, showing the whites, snuffling and shaking its head. Ricardo ran his hands down the horse's legs. "Do you know him?" asked Zebra. "No, I don't recognise him," Ricardo murmured, low voice. "Strong fellow and ready to run. Not handsome, though." Zebra scratched his chin in a gesture he had caught from older men. "Faces don't win races," he said in Sienese, a local saying as old as it was true. Ricardo smiled. "Indeed. Indeed." He frowned suddenly. "Zebra, what? His coat is rough. He needs some condition on him. He's sickening. And smell." Ricardo sniffed the air, and Zebra did likewise. Overlaying the hay and horse, there was a faint chemical tang in the air, like an apothecary's shop. "Perhaps they're giving him physic." "Yes, but there's something... something..." He looked at the horse again. Something troubled him. He would like to see this jittery horse run, as that was the only true test. But Nello was set to train in the Maremma, out of the city's eye. "Zebra," Ricardo said, "how about a night in the Eagle's Nest? Are you up to it?" Zebra shrugged. "One bed of straw is as good as another, and they know me well here." Ricardo looked at the boy, all ruffled brown hair and clear green eyes, a sprinkling of freckles across the snub nose. He felt a rush of affection, a sudden misgiving about leaving him here. "You're sure?" The boy nodded, his eyes drooping. "It must be past midnight. Let him rest." "Very well, then. Stay and sleep. And in the morning, offer to help with the horse. I want to know how he goes with Nello on his back. And you?" "I'll be back in the morning," happiness swelled in his throat, "to teach Pia to ride." Zebra's tiredness did not blunt his beady intelligence. He shot Ricardo a look from under his brows. Ricardo was chastened, and, as he crept from the courtyard, he reflected that if a child of 9 could read his feelings that easily, he had better learn to guard them more carefully.
As with all Marina Fiorato's books, this story is alive with colour and rich in historical detail. This was a quick and easy read. The Siena settings are gorgeous and offers an introduction into the culture and traditions of the city. It has just enough romance in it and a happy ending where all the good guys live happily ever after and the bad guys each get their just desserts. A great story of treachery, courage and the power of love.
From Southside to the world and in association with Middlesbrough Library Services, it's the Book of the Month with Jill Appleton.
Strokes affect 130,000 people in England and Wales each year. Here's a recipe that can dramatically decrease your chances of strokes.
Excellent. I better get a pen.
167 grams of calcium, 225 grams of magnesium.
Hang on, slow down. And one tablespoon.
Remember, any more than one tablespoon could kill you. Any less than one tablespoon could kill you.
Right, what was the recipe?
And that's the recipe.
Oh,
if you would like a more simple solution, you can always call Farmer Nord on 01670 519989.
All right.
Or visit the website farmernord.co.uk.
Let me see if I can jot that down. What was the number again?
01670 519989. Or visit the website farmernord.co.uk.
And how do you spell Farmer Nord, I wonder?
PHARMANORD.co.uk.
It's almost as if I'm having a conversation with the radio.
Don't be silly, that's impossible.
Farmer Nord, winning the war of nutrition.
You're listening to a Southside Broadcasting podcast. What is Southside Broadcasting? We're a media company which aims to provide a unique range of features from the rural, health and lifestyle worlds. That's why you can listen to such golden audio nuggets as our regular interviews with correspondents from Los Angeles, Nashville, New York, Frankfurt and London. Take part in our literary Book of the Month features. Check out nutritional advice and follow our coverage of badminton, Burley, The Great Yorkshire Show, The Newark and Notts Show and the Lincolnshire Shows, as well as the Tullet Prebon London Boat Show and many more. You can listen to these and many more podcasts on southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. For further information on how you can join or reach the over 35,000 folk who regularly download our podcasts, call us on 01642 854 742 or email info@southsideradio.com now.
Of course, one of the big stars on The X-Files, and he's making a documentary called The Truth Is Out There.
One of the things that UFO research has done to me is instill in me a healthy disrespect for the things that government says.
They are poisoning our people. There is a population control agenda. There really are people who want to kill off the majority of the people in the world.
If we don't allow these corrupt banks to fail, then the nation will fail, and there will be no recovery.
Don't stand on the sides of the river and comment on how corrupt and dark and evil everything is. We all know that.
I don't need to have you understand or agree with me or believe. It doesn't matter to me. I know what I know.
The name of our film is?
The Truth Is Out There.
But it really isn't.
But isn't there a universal truth that science is going for?
Perhaps the universal truth is what makes us subjective.
Okay, you just blew my mind.
Parkville is a purpose-built residential care centre situated at the heart of Middlesbrough and providing personalised care in a modern and homely environment. Parkville aims to help older people to continue to live independent and active lives within the wider community whilst benefiting from the care and support of an experienced and dedicated team of nursing and care staff. At Parkville, we provide facilities to accommodate residential elderly and residential EMI service users. To find out more, please telephone 01642 223334. That's 01642 223334. Parkville Care Centre. Care to call us home.
Book of the Month. More than a podcast, greater than a radio show. Quite simply an audio treat for the enlightened. With Jill Appleton and Jill Prowse, and every so often, some extremely lovely writers.
And indeed, we have two very lovely writers in the studio with Rob Nichols, of course, director of Fly Me to the Moon and writer of a whole range of texts, etc., and Charles Arthur, who has written many a legal aspect, and probably when the biography is published, the autobiography, Charles Arthur, My Story, it'll be a very major read. Rob, we'll come to you first. Marina Fiorato and The Daughter of Siena, her fourth text that we've actually analysed. What are your thoughts?
It's the first time I've read her and I enjoyed it. I suppose I've done a lot of history, still do a lot of history stuff.
Yep.
So, but I'm not big on 18th century Italy.
Mm.
But yeah, I enjoyed reading it from that point of view. And it was an interesting plot. It's quite good because you can work out as you're coming towards the end where sort of threads through the book come from and where they end in and everything. And I enjoyed it.
Excellent, that's great. So I wasn't sure whether you'd actually done any of the previous ones. Obviously, the Botticelli Secret and Madonna of the Almonds, my own personal favourite, and of course her first one, which was the Glassblower of Murano. Jill Prowse.
Well, I did enjoy it, but because I've read all her books and I own all her books, and I absolutely love all her books, I think that, I mean, the very first one, Glassblower of Murano, can't be faulted. And it was a fantastic plot and took you from present day back in time, and it was amazing. The second two I really enjoyed. Bit harder reading because the language, etc., was a little bit more heavy to get your head round, but thoroughly enjoyable, really good plots again. This one, thoroughly enjoyed it as a read, but if it had been my first book reading Marina, I probably wouldn't have been as passionate about getting her other books, because it might have just, it would have made me think, yes, it's a really good read, it's colourful, it's got a good plot, it's got a lovely, happy sort of feel to it at times and not at others, but quite a lightweight book for Marina, if I hadn't read the other three. So it's still a very, very good book, but at the same time, not with quite the depth of the other three. And it's hard to say, really, because I'm not saying anything dreadful about it, and I do want everybody to go out and read it.
It's like when you're a fan of anything from that point of view. There's that notion, and I'm not saying it's a case of we supported Marina Fiorato from our first book, etc., and now she's gone all mainstream and all the rest of bits and pieces. It's not the same, like as Rob would attest to in the music industry, really, occasionally happens. But we do like the whole thing. I share that. I did feel, whisper this, because I'm sure Marina will tune in to this, I felt at times it was almost breaking into formula fiction.
Right.
It was almost though, well, I did that before, tick, I've done that, I've got the plucky and beautiful heroine, I've got the charming romantic person, yes, I've got the slight twists and the tales, and I've also, I have to be said, in these politically correct oriented days, got a little bit concerned that this time there is a possibility of perhaps just a little twinge of concern vis-a-vis the way that gay characters were actually presented in the piece, because it wasn't great. I mean, certainly, I mean, I appreciate that there were lots of historical things, and Marina is a historian, she's a Cambridge graduate Don and works through that basis, but I just felt actually it didn't quite contain anything new and novel. And I take your board. The thing I really liked about the first text, which of course was the Glassblower of Murano, was the way she introduced us via the present day. Had a character there, jumped back, worked on that basis. The last two novels, and obviously this one is the third, have all been set totally in the historical context. I felt though it worked very much for the last two. This one didn't quite sort of take off, although, again, a very, very easy read, a very,
very,
very pleasing
read,
very good read. It's interesting getting Rob's sort of choice. Obviously, it's the first time you'd actually sort of encountered Marina Fiorato.
Yeah.
So, from your perspective, you thought, this is a gripping... I mean, I thought very cinematic as well.
Yeah, definitely. It was interesting because the world that she portrays of Siena in the 18th century could almost be like medieval England. And it would be very different if you sat at 18th century London.
Yeah.
It's like all these things that so many of the things were the Contrada. The sort of survival of a medieval past.
And also you've got obviously a similar time in comparison. You've got George III, you've got a whole heap of other things. I think the interweaving with historical characters was okay, I felt, in this one, but I felt it was better in The Botticelli Secret, who again emerged from that perspective.
Yeah, and as I say, I thoroughly enjoyed it, don't get me wrong. It just felt a bit more lightweight than the last three. And I just felt that the plot line wasn't quite as deep and intricate, maybe, as the last three had been. But at the same time, I enjoyed the book, so, you know, read it.
Charles Arthur is has been given 20 minutes to actually read the book, because it's like sort of a brief and so on. But Charles, your thoughts on what we've just said and obviously what you've heard and all that. Is this the sort of thing which, allowing the fact that Jill was very impassioned to say, go out and buy it, would you do that? Are you going to actually leave the studio with it in your hands today?
I'd quite like to, actually, because I quite like to read it, because I was always into history when I was a lot younger, and I studied, actually, the Medicis for my history A-level, so... you know, I quite like the idea of the sort of historical type novel.
And they were very much a family that I presume took Machiavelli's The Prince as the kind of Bible, really. You know, this is the way you actually operate in many ways.
Oh, the Medicis were quite a sort of powerful family in the sort of Italian sort of scene. And yes. And interesting sort of times that they lived in.
Certainly Marina can never be faulted for her historical accuracy, because, you know, as one would expect, that was sort of spot on. Horse racing descriptions I thought were very effective. I thought the notion of the Lipizzana race, which is something I've actually sort of covered as well in terms of horses, and that they sort of worked through was well put together. The horse whisperers was coming through. It was quite sad, obviously, the death of the unicorn, but again, possibly just a little bit telegraphed at times. Mm. I could kind of see that, you know, there was going to be that sort of line there. And maybe, you know, that initial line where, oh no, you know, he's got to do his duty, he's got to be a royal, he's got to sort of, without giving too many spoilers away, and then they all end up happily ever after. I just felt maybe just a little bit of a tweeness there that was slotted as a thought. But Jill Appleton, what's your summation?
I enjoyed it. I know I can see what you're saying about this one being a bit more lightweight than the others. But
it's still got some robust language in there, has to be said.
I like lightweight.
And robust language?
I don't want, sometimes, I think the last book we read was a little bit too heavy going for me, so I enjoyed this one. It wasn't too hard to get my head round. I mean, you know what I'm like, I don't like anything too complicated.
And
I love the way she writes, and I love Italy, so I enjoy the descriptions of the scenery and everything else. And I like a happy ending as well, so ticked all my boxes.
I like a happy ending.
There we are. Okay, Rob, scores, these are the sort of crucial points. What would you score it out of 10?
8.
8. Okay. Jill?
I'll give it a good solid 8.
A good solid 8. Jill Appleton?
I'll go for 8.5.
Yeah. Charles, it's unfair. Can't read.
Well, for the three or four pages I've read, I'd give it a 7-ish.
Good heavens! Yeah, I'm going to give it
about the dead donkey.
and so I will again. I'll qualify this. I'm going to give it a slightly disappointing 8. Slightly disappointing because Maria set such high standards. But this time didn't quite, but obviously she's got another one out we haven't even read, so we're one book behind now, so you know she's already working on a set, so you know we have to work our way through that. So anyway, that's the Daughter of Siena. What's happening next then, Jill Appleton? What's the next text?
A bit of a chiller, seeing as it's Halloween coming up. It's Tideline by Penny Hancock.
There you go. Of course, you can listen to the whole thing again and lots of the others on southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. Charles, Rob, Jill, and Jill, many thanks. Back again very shortly, I would have thought. And indeed, the life continues in its own merry little way. Rob, anything you'd like to plug in terms of books? In fact, booksellers, worth mentioning that Kadeem Hussain has got his store. Have a shameless
plug. Oh, yeah, that's right. Yes, Kadeem Hussain's Borough Bookworm has reopened in the Forbes buildings. Oh. So it's the only independent bookshop in Middlesbrough, so it's worth supporting.
The only independent bookstore in Middlesbrough, so big up to Kadeem for doing that.
Yes.
See, he would have been most upset if he'd listened to the whole thing. So, again, you haven't mentioned me.
He would have been devastated.
I think so.
From Southside to the world, and in association with Middlesbrough Library Services, it's the Book of the Month with Jill Appleton.
For October, we have been reading The Fat Years by Chan Koon Chung.
For November's Book of the Month, we decided to give a novel by Geoffrey Archer a try.
This month, we have been reading the unusually titled The Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society by Mary Ann Schaffer and Annie Barrows. For our January Book of the Month, we have been reading Dark Matter by Michelle Paver.
For February, we have been reading another offering from one of Southside Broadcasting's favourite authors, Ian Lennox.
Our March Book of the Month is Small Island by Andrea Levy.
Book of the Month. More than a podcast, Greater Than a Radio Show, quite simply an audio treat for the enlightened, with Jill Appleton and Jill Prowse, and every so often, some extremely lovely writers.